Hello, I'm Jason Rugard of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. Welcome to a special summer show. Every Friday, I'll be taking a week-by-week look back at the summer of 1990. This was a box office season that was amongst the most competitive and influential in movie-going history. On each show, I'll be chronicling the performance, critical response, and historical relevance of the biggest hits and costliest misfires that shaped the summer of 1990. Episode 5. June 22nd to the 24th, 1990. Our first film, RoboCop 2.
About a year ago, we gave this city RoboCop.
Ready for duty, partner?
Nothing I'd rather do.
I think he's worked out pretty well.
Have a seat. This is a bust.
This unit needs millions of dollars in parts. You see, RoboCop's off warranty.
He's one of mine. And I want him back on his feet.
Oh. I believe that Murphy's case was unusual, but not unique. We can find someone else. Someone to whom the prospect might even be desirable.
And now, we need a law enforcement unit capable of meeting the enemy on his own ground.
She's screaming psychotic, sir.
Well, we aren't planning to build a toy. I'm carrying enough firepower to get the job done.
I got good news for you. You're going to have a chance for immortality.
With great pleasure, I give you RoboCop 2.
RoboCop 2 hit U.S. screens on June 22nd and debuted in second place in the weekend box office standings. It grossed $14 million, or $30 million adjusted, during its opening weekend, securing the runner-up spot behind the second weekend of Dick Tracy's two-week stint atop the charts. The summer of 1990 was clearly shaping up as a tough season of sequels. Audiences were embracing new, original stories while treating the high-concept sequels with indifference. This follow-up to the sleeper hit of summer 1987 was accompanied by lofty expectations from moviegoers and executives at Orion Pictures. They were counting on RoboCop 2 to be the struggling studio's tentpole release in the lucrative but overcrowded summer session. Within 3 weeks, RoboCop had sunk out of the top 10 grocers and subsequently ended its run with $45 million, or $97 million adjusted for today. Basically a third less than its cheaper and better forebearer. The violent sequel came under heavy criticism for its marketing campaign that was aimed at both adults and children. By 1990, RoboCop had become a property that was being sold to kids, as witnessed by a Saturday morning cartoon, video game tie-ins, and an action figure tour line. Here are esteemed film critics Siskel and Ebert discussing their thoughts on the film's new approach. This is followed by the intro for the cartoon program and a vintage ad for the RoboCop toy line.
Our first movie is RoboCop 2, and all during this movie I kept asking myself, how can a movie this violent and confused also be this funny? It's like there are two movies here. One is an hilarious satire on futuristic advertising, and the other one is an exercise in violence that really offended me with its portrayal of a young boy as a vicious killer, who is played by Gabriel Damon and is the right-hand man of the drug dealer. This is a kid who looks about 12, and he mows people down viciously with a machine gun and uses a whole lot of R-rated four-letter words. It really disturbed me to see this little boy in this violent role, and it disturbed me even more when I started to think about it, because RoboCop is rated R, but as everyone knows, kids do get into R-rated movies like this one, and even more of them will see it on home video. Was this 12-year-old criminal written into the movie to give the underage viewers someone to identify with? I'd like to think that wasn't possible, but I can't think of any other reason for such an unlikely, depressing, inappropriate, and distasteful script decision.
Well, that was my reaction to the picture. I was sort of flabbergasted. You sit there, and these words coming out of this kid, and it wasn't even winked at anyway. It was played straightforward, and it had, and you mentioned that a film this funny, there were just a couple of bits, Roger, and you have to be careful. There were a couple of cute bits in the film that are funny.
More than a couple, Gene, but they just are dropped in. It's very strange because the movie is one thing, and then every once in a while, it's like you're watching television, and you get these commercials. There are several moments like that. that, but I did laugh at, and I thought, gee, this is funny, I'm laughing, and now I'm back to the dreary, depressing movie, which is a mess as far as the screenplay is concerned,
yes.
Which is very offensive in the use of this 12-year-old. Now, make no mistake about it, this kid does kill people.
Yes.
He does take over the drug lord's gang.
Yes, it's mean-spirited,
yeah.
Ugly, and you said the screenplay is a mess. It is a mess. There are stories that are not tied together. In the first film, we had a warm feelings toward this RoboCop character, a man, some kind of mutant in a machine, and here's
nothing. We can't even make up its mind if he's in there or not.
Detroit, the near future. Officer Alex J. Murphy and his partner Ann Lewis fight to rid the decaying city of the criminal element which infests it. After being mortally wounded in the line of duty, Officer Murphy is outfitted by OCP with bulletproof titanium robotic parts and with computer-enhanced motor and sensory capabilities. He has become the ultimate super cop. RoboCop.
RoboCop. Part man, part robot, all cop. The ultimate in law enforcement. RoboCop and the Ultra Police. The only cops with rapid repeat cap firing.
He's unstoppable.
Battling the worst criminals, Headhunter and Nitro. The Ultra Police, protected by Robo Armor, bring RoboCop even more firepower. In the fight for justice, nothing can stop RoboCop. RoboCop and the Ultra Police, each sold separately with RoboCaps.
RoboCop 2 was directed by Irvin Kirshner, of Empire Strikes Back fame. He replaced director Paul Verhoeven, who had helmed the original, but left and moved on to greener pastures with the Schwarzenegger vehicle Total Recall. The screenplay was penned by Frank Miller of 300 and Watchmen acclaim, and Waylon Greene. Both Peter Weller and Nancy Allen returned as Murphy and Lewis, respectively. This time, they must battle a vicious drug lord, played with menace by Tom Noonan, and his young protege, and stop them from distributing a highly addictive narcotic, dubbed Nuke, to the population of Old Detroit. The marketing machine was in full effect for this $35 million project. An early teaser trailer showing RoboCop drawing his firearm and asking a pedestrian to refrain from smoking was used as an in-theater PSA before all of that summer's films. Awareness was high, and expectations were higher, so when RoboCop 2 underperformed, it was immediately considered a forgettable failure. While Part 2 doesn't come close to matching the style, sleekness, or originality of the original, it's a fairly entertaining piece of pulp cinema. The tone of the first film has been copied here, and the change in director is only evident by the toned-down violence in the sequel. This would be the last time Weller would don the suit, and his physical and emotional contributions to the movie are undeniably a large part of why these two films work. In 1993, Orion would release RoboCop 3, which went with a PG-13 rating and bombed at the box office, killing the franchise until the woefully misguided reboot 19 years later. I saw RoboCop as part of a birthday party. Our friend's parents took us 11-year-olds to the theater, and we loved the movie. Viewing it today, it's a bit clunkier and cheaper than I recall. Still, I've always enjoyed this sequel for its cyberpunk nihilism and sometimes funny view of corporate culture and urban decay. It's as if Total Recall and Gremlins 2 combined to make a violent and satirical comment on the genre and America circa 1990. Our next film, Betsy's Wedding.
From Touchstone Pictures, sometimes a daughter's wedding,
let's splurge a little,
turns into a father's nightmare. He's got to pay for the dress.
You can't pay for this.
He's got to pay for the food.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do.
No,
you know.
He's got to pay for everything.
I only need $30,000.
We're willing to not only put up the house that I'm building, we'll put up our own home.
Even if his little girl,
I'm really thinking of calling it off,
changes her mind.
How can you be so calm like that?
Because I have that headache I get just before I throw up.
Alan Alda, Molly Ringwald, Betsy's Wedding, rated R.
Now playing at a theater near you.
Betsy's Wedding also premiered on the weekend of June 22nd. This innocuous dramedy landed in the sixth spot during its opening weekend with receipts of $4 million, or $9 million adjusted, totaling out at $19 million, or $42 million in today's money, off a budget of $35. Making this a money loser for Buena Vista, whose Dick Tracy still ruled the charts. Star Alan Alda wrote and directed this project, which was reportedly inspired by the wedding of his youngest daughter. The film co-stars Molly Ringwald, Madeline Kahn, Joe Pesci, Ali Sheedy, Burt Young, and marks the screen debut of Anthony LaPaglia. Alan Alda plays Eddie, a longtime construction worker whose youngest daughter is getting married. Money is tight, but Eddie's persuaded by his wife to throw a lavish ceremony to impress the well-off family of Betsy's fiancé. In desperation, Eddie turns to his unsavory brother Oscar, who puts Eddie in touch with a local loan shark. Meanwhile, the nuptials of the title go off during a comically torrential rainstorm. Relax, I'm not spoiling anything. The film's poster showcased the cast in their wedding attires, standing up to their ankles in water while holding umbrellas. While the film sits at 50% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes, cast members Molly Ringwald and Ally Sheedy were unceremoniously nominated for Razzies, both of whom lost out to perceived worst performances from Bo Derek and Sofia Coppola. Betsy's Wedding is an entirely forgettable concoction that is more memorable for reuniting Breakfast Club stars Ringwald and Sheedy than for anything else. That'll do it for this week's show. Join us next week when I look at Days of Thunder and Ghost Dad.